Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
OSHA not protecting workers, so what does that mean? Lawsuit time, the AFL-CIO going to court. File for unemployment in Ohio? Well, your personal data may have been compromised. And today on the show, the latest from The Nation and the North Coast Labor Federation. Good afternoon and welcome to America's Workforce, recorded right here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. You can find us online at awfradio.com. Shows are posted there. Also, you can listen to this show wherever you stream podcasts. iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And once you get hooked on the show, we would like you to subscribe to our podcast and give us a rating. A five-star rating would be real nice. All right, we have two guests on the show today. I've been chasing this guy for probably about 5 to 6 weeks. Jeet Heer is his name, and he is one of the writers for The Nation magazine. This is an extremely good publication. Jeet is the national affairs correspondent. He's also author of several books. And we're just going to run over some of his recent posts about what's going on in America with regard to leadership and lack of leadership. His latest posting, facing a real catastrophe with a pretend president. He talks about Donald Trump following what he called an ostrich strategy. In other words, head in the sand for denying the reality of the pandemic, out of fear that acknowledging the scale of the problem would damage the economy. He seems to say, well, Trump is saying, the economy, the health, well, you know what, the health's important, but maybe that should take a back seat. The current pandemic, says Jeet, is often compared to a world historical catastrophe, like the Great Depression or the two world wars. But there's one significant difference. In all those previous crises, America had national leadership, however shaken by events. In the pandemic, the president has been, in a very real sense, AWOL from the beginning. He doesn't stop there. He asks the question, where's Joe Biden? Now, Joe Biden is not the nominee yet. He will be eventually, but Jeet writes, Biden seems to have decided that the low-voltage campaigning style that made him the presumptive nominee is the way forward for the general election. Well, he may be right politically, but keeping a low profile, that may not be the best way to try to get to the White House. So he takes a look at both sides. There's another post, too, which really caught my attention, and you've heard President Trump say the pandemic is pretty much a war in America, a war against the virus. Well, Jeet takes it one step further, says if the pandemic is a war, Trump is a war criminal because of the way he mishandled it. So we'll touch on all of that with Jeet here. Pat Gallagher, on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the United Steelworkers, will be joining us. Pat wearing many hats, two just there. First thing we're going to get into, the steelworkers have endorsed Joe Biden for president. This is a comment from Tom Conway, who is the president of the United Steelworkers, which is also a sponsor of the show. He said Vice President Biden has long been a friend of workers and our union. The steelworkers is proud to stand with him now as he seeks to put our country back on a path towards shared prosperity through responsible leadership. There's more, and this is posted on the Steelworkers website. The other story is your union, your voice. And this is something the Steelworkers started, oh my gosh, I want to say probably about 5-6 months ago. In fact, Tom Conway was talking about this. The whole idea behind this is, all right, you hear the leadership of the union going a certain way on a certain candidate or certain issue. Well, unions have a collective voice of members. And what the steelworkers did, they went out into the community and they did this various ways. They did town halls, they did surveys and asked people, what concerns you? What is your priority? What's number one, number two, number three, number four? And just to give you some examples, 87%, I'd call that a clear majority, 80% said affordable health care and prescription drugs were very important, followed by retirement security. We're talking Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, labor laws that support our ability to form unions and negotiate strong contracts. 81% said that. Other issues, trade agreements that protect U.S. workers, increase workers' wages, workplace safety, which is paramount right now. And they also got into who's best to handle all this. And that's where Biden comes in. And they talk about his plan to build on the successes of Obamacare, expand Social Security, Medicare eligibility. In fact, they're talking about dropping it to the age of 60. Right now, you don't get on Medicare until you're 65. That's part of the plan. So we'll discuss all of that with Pat Gallagher, our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the AFL-CIO has sued the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, better known as OSHA, over its failure to protect workers from the coronavirus. The petition filed this week with the D.C. court seeks an order forcing OSHA to issue emergency standards to protect workers from the virus. Now, while agencies are typically not required to issue regulations, the petition says that OSHA's failure to issue standards amid the pandemic, quote, constitutes an abuse of agency discretion so blatant and of such magnitude as to amount to a clear abdication of statutory responsibility. Whoa. The petition granted by the court, if it is granted by the court, the agency would have 30 days to issue standards for protecting all employees in workplaces covered by OSHA from airborne disease transmission. In a statement, Rich Trumka, head of the Labor Federation, says it's truly a sad day in America when working people have to sue the organization which is tasked with protecting our health and safety. But if the Trump administration refuses to act, we just have to compel them to do so. He pointed out that over 90,000 people have died. Now, there's another part to this, another pro-worker group that we've talked about on the show many, many times. In fact, they just came out a month ago with their Dirty Dozen. It's all the corporations and organizations that have no regard for worker safety. It's called the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, better known as NCOSH. They took a different tack, with Trump sitting on extensive and detailed CDC guidance to schools, firms, and individuals about how to carefully reopen. NCOSH convened a panel of experts who published their own recommendations, and it concludes comprehensive guidelines for workplace safety, worker participation, and fair compensation for sick, injured, and at-risk workers, all prepared by certified industrial hygienists, academicians, attorneys, physicians, and leaders of non-governmental and non-profit organizations should be involved in all this. The post-COVID world would be different in many ways, said Jessica Martinez, a public health specialist and NCOSH's co-executive director. One difference we insist upon, workers must be at the table and actively involved in decisions about workplace safety. How many times have unions said that before, right? We talked a number of times on this show about the mess with Ohio's unemployment compensation. In fact, we had a discussion on this yesterday when Betsy Rader was running for an Ohio Senate seat. Now, it's been revealed personal data of Ohioans who filed for unemployment with the state was left compromised by the company contracted to build a new filing system. This according to the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. An email sent yesterday by the department to filers for pandemic unemployment assistance, which is the federal unemployment stimulus plan that Congress passed about a month ago, said two dozen individuals had access to personal data, which included names, social security numbers, addresses, and the award total. Deloitte Consulting, the firm tasked with administrating the additional $600 a week, notify the state over the weekend of the breach. The department said Deloitte remedied the issue within an hour of its discovery, and there's no evidence that any of the information was improperly used. Well, maybe not now. Oh, my gosh. All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce, our segment with the nation and Jeet here coming up next. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNAV, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This special message goes out to all veterans and dependents of veterans who are living in Cuyahoga County. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission proudly provides a wide variety of services and assistance, including the following: filing VA claims, helping obtain disability or widow pensions, assistance obtaining military records, memorial affairs, social work, rent or mortgage assistance, utility bills, food, clothing and hygiene, and VA medical transportation. For more information about these services or your eligibility, call 1-844-405-VETS. That's 1-844-405-8387. Or go online to CuyahogaVets.org. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission, veterans helping veterans since 1886.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. You can find us online at awfradio.com. And, of course, you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts. iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And once you get hooked on the show, we ask you to subscribe to our podcast and give us a five-star rating. We would certainly appreciate that. All right, let's go to line number one. I've been following this guy. We started this segment with The Nation magazine, my gosh, several years ago, and they have such a good array of prolific writers. And joining us now is Jeet here, and Jeet has been with The Nation, what is it, about a year now, Jeet? Is that correct?
Yeah. I think it's almost exactly a year I started, and before that I was at the New Republic.
I gotcha. Tell me about your journalistic background. What got you interested in writing?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I guess I was really sort of interested in politics. I did a history degree, and then got there's a big newspaper here, the National Post, that was recruiting. This is a period where journalism was actually growing back in the late 1990s, so I got hired there, and I've been pretty active since then. I've sort of found Twitter has been very useful for getting the word out.
Yeah. Well, you've definitely got my attention on a couple of your articles. One of them, and I talked about this several weeks ago, about the coronavirus class war that's already started. If the pandemic is a war, then Trump is a war criminal. We'll touch on that today. And your most recent one is facing a real catastrophe with a pretend president. What's interesting about this piece is there's a lack of leadership, and it's not necessarily the current occupant in the White House, the man who's most likely going to be his challenger this November. A lot of people are asking, where's Joe Biden? I'm going to let you pick it up from there. What's at play here, Jeet?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really interesting dynamic. I mean, I want to first point it out to Trump, because his whole thing, because he is the president, and America's really facing, you know, I think the biggest existential crisis since the Great Depression and World War II. And Trump's whole approach has been, like, you know, to, you know, give these speeches and be on Twitter. Just the other day, he did this tweet, which was the scene from Independence Day, where, you know, the president gives a heroic speech, but it's Trump's head superimposed. And I think that's very revealing. Like, Trump wants to play movie president, right? He wants to make the big speeches, but he's actually not doing anything. And in fact, he wants to create a situation where he can blame everything that's going wrong on someone else. He can blame the governors for both the spread of the virus and then also saying they didn't reopen the economy enough. But, I mean, I think what's, for me, distressing is that on the other end, you know, you would expect the Democrats to really putting up an opposition to this, and they really haven't been. I mean, I think Biden, the thing with Biden is that he's found his political niche or his success in, like, not being visible, in being the sort of empty vessel that people can project whatever they want to. And if you look at back at the primaries, the interesting thing is this, more Biden showed himself to voters, the less they liked him. So in the first three states, those were the states where, like, you know, like, candidates were really going out there, where Biden has spent the most time doing it, and he did very poorly. And it's really only, you know, thanks to South Carolina and then many of his rivals dropping out, that he really started succeeding. So with Biden, like, you know, his appeal is a kind of return to normality, return to the Obama era. And so I think the less he shows himself, unfortunately, the more, for good or ill, that helps him. But I think that creates a real leadership crisis. Like, I would really like to see the Democrats, like, you know, be an opposition party. And it goes beyond, I mean, you know, the COVID-19 thing. Like, there's all sorts of corruption going on with, you know, like, Trump firing the inspector general, and who's apparently looking into the secretary of state. And really, since the impeachment, the Democrats in Congress have really stepped back from oversight of Trump, and there's been no oversight of the handling of COVID-19. So it's really distressing. Like, I think there's a vacuum at the top.
Yeah. Do you think the pandemic has kind of scared them? They're just kind of waiting to see how Trump reacts or does not react. Obviously, he was missing in action for some time there in February, a good chunk of February and part of early March as well. They're taking him on that. But then he responds saying he's doing more than any other person in modern history. In fact, all the presidents, if you add them all up together, he says he's the greatest. And people are believing that. Now, Jeet, what's your take on that when he comes across that way?
Well, I think he has, you know, like, he's found his niche. I know, I mean, like, are people really believing him? If you look at the polling, it's kind of strange. I mean, it's not strange, but it's telling, I think, that he's really where he's always been, which is at 40, 41, 42, 43%. Like, it goes up and down by 1 or 2%, but never really that much. And so there's that niche of people who, like, you know, are with him, for good or, for whatever happens, and really are impervious to information. And I think he's found a success in, you know, projecting, strength, in being the kind of, you know, the guy who's, like, you will say tough words, attack the lying media, you know, come up with the tweet. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think he hasn't really done anything. I think the Democrats I mean, I don't know if this is, it might be good politics, but it feels like a moral failure in any case, which is that they really decided, you know, like, Trump is going to collapse because of what's happening, and we should just get out of the way. Just let this happen. I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like there's a, I don't know if that's going to be enough, and I feel like there's real, I mean, both in terms of winning the election, I think you got to give people a reason to vote, especially if I think, you know, there could be like a second surge of the virus just coming right in the fall in October, November, and people are, you're going to be asking people to put their lives on the line to vote. So I think you have to actually give them something to vote for.
Yeah, it's almost like the Democrats are hoping Trump will lose the election. Not necessarily that the Democrats will win, but he'll lose it, and as a result, the Democrats will win. That seems to be their course of action here. Now, enter Obama.
Yeah, that's the strategy so far. Yeah, I mean, that might change, but I think that's definitely what's going on.
Yeah, enter Obama now. Now, Obama's speaking out, and I'm just wondering, is that surprising you at all, that he's speaking out? Presidents usually don't do that kind of thing. He came on pretty strong over the weekend, which kind of irked Trump a bit. Where's Biden again? That's a question. What's your reaction to all that?
Yeah, I mean, it is unusual. I think Obama, I mean, I think a lot of people have felt they wanted Obama to speak in for a long time against a lot of things that Trump has been doing. And Obama's really, you know, held to that rule. Like, a former president doesn't criticize the current commander in chief. And so, I mean, I think the comments that Obama made, which were exactly spot on, I mean, he's basically saying, you know, like, to young people, graduates, you know, like, if you think people, you know, in charge don't know what they're doing, you're probably right. Like, I think there's a very strong criticism, and I think it's a valid one. I think that, I mean, I think it's a sign that Obama really feels like if there's going to be a replacement of Trump, he has to step up to the plate. And we've actually already kind of seen this a little bit behind the scenes. Like, I think there's a lot of sort of reporting indicating that Obama really helped Biden, like, secure the nomination, that it was Obama that negotiated with Pete Buttigieg, with Amy Klobuchar, and with all the others, and even with Bernie Sanders, to, like, kind of convince them to, you know, settle this thing early. And so, I mean, in a weird way, it's like, you know, there's an image in the sort of classical mythology of for the Trojan War of Aeneas, the hero of Troy, carrying his old father on his back out of Troy. And I feel like that's what's going on. Like, I think Obama, you know, is going to carry Biden across the finish line. and that's maybe an indication of the weakness of Biden as a candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's one thing that Trump is very, very good at, and that is dividing the nation. I mean, we've had divide before. The political divide has been going on for many, many years, but Trump has even accelerated that. And his base is feverish. It doesn't matter what he says. They think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You kind of touched on this in your article several weeks back about the class war. And Trump is very cognizant of the class war in America, and he's basically using that. Maybe you can kind of spell that out for our listeners, Jeet, because you said it better than I did, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think there's a kind of attempt on the part of the Republicans to say that the lockdown is really this elite in Washington. It's the old cultural war scenario that's like imposing itself on the country and these so-called experts, and that the working people want to go back to work. And I mean, like, the thing is, if you look at actual, like, what's going on out there and the actual polling and everything that we know, it's the complete opposite. There's actually been a lot of wildcat strikes of workers, you know, like not wanting to go to work, of wanting their place of employment to put in more safety rules, you know, things like meatpacking plants and Amazon warehouses and buses. And the real, there is a push to end the lockdown, it's really coming from the sort of, you know, like the wealthy. Like there's a lot of people in Wall Street who are like saying, well, you know, like why don't we just get things working again? And that's easy for them to say because they can work from home. You know, like the upper middle class and the wealthy, like they can work from home. We see this in New York where, like, you know, the richest neighborhoods have seen very little and in some cases no cases of COVID-19. And that's because everyone there, like, immediately went to the Hamptons or went to, like, their cottage or wherever they could. And The actual workers to stay there are the ones that are suffering. There's a real class dimension. And so this call to end the lockdown, I mean, it's the kind of, I think it's the most brutal class war we've seen in America since the late 19th century, where, you know, you had the Pinkertons and these goons, you know, like opening fire on workers. It's like you're having a call for the working class to be sacrificed to keep Wall Street going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you point out in that article, the very collapse of American unions in recent decades means that the stabilizing force of organized labor is gone, although we're seeing pockets of organizing going on there. But to get back to your article.
That's exactly right. And I think there's actually a lot of very interesting, I mean, one of the most interesting things is, I think there's been more than 150 wildcat strikes and labor actions and people in places where there aren't unions, like, you know, like organizing, because, I mean, their lives are on the line, and they have bosses that are perfectly willing to send them into dangerous situations. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the things with unions. I feel like if you have a union, they're not going to sacrifice their members for this. And we see this in the I mean, I think that's a big difference with Europe and the United States, and also Canada and the United States. I mean, in Canada, the big push for the stimulus funding came from when the head of the auto workers union met up with the Trudeau Liberals and with the big banks, and the unions were all involved with the stimulus funding and with the sort of, you know, from the start, whereas we don't see that in America. And so we see like kind of stimulus funding that's going to Wall Street and not to ordinary people.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm reading, too, that the stimulus checks, instead of being $1,200, they should have been $6,000. And I know the Democrats have another plan of action here, but it doesn't seem to be going anywhere, or at least not now. I want to get back to...
I mean, to give them credit, I think the Democrats did a good thing with ramping up the unemployment insurance, and that really helped a lot of people in America. But I have to say, like, I mean, that leaves a lot of people out, right? There's a lot of, like, you know... working class people that aren't eligible for unemployment insurance, and I think it's going to be like, I mean, it'd be much better to just give straight out checks.
Yeah, I want to get back to the 30s. You talked about those days of the wildcat strikes, and America is going through the Great Depression. There are many. I'm sure you're aware. There's some comparisons here of the FDR moment of what FDR did to lift us out of the Great Depression. His predecessor, Herbert Hoover, he obviously saw the Wall Street crash on him and started the Great Depression, and he kind of like just stayed there, didn't do very much, thinking it was kind of going to fix itself, which is the attitude many have today about this situation with the virus right now. Do you see some similarities, Jeet, in what's going on there, and will it take like an FDR to pull us out? What's your thoughts?
Sure, yeah, I think there are real parallels with that period, especially with, like, Herbert Hoover, where, you know, Hoover's initial reaction was, first of all, to blame foreigners, to say, well, this is a European depression that's been inflicted, you know, it's like, this is a China virus. And then he blamed the governor, saying, well, this is the governor's responsibility to take care of the poor in their areas. And then kept on doing the upbeat thing of, like, well, you know, it's almost going to be over. So, Hoover is Trump in a nutshell. Now, the question is, will Biden be FDR? But I think the thing to remember is that FDR himself was not FDR when he first started out. Like, he was a pretty middle-of-the-road Democrat. He ran in 1932, and he's going to cut the deficit. And what happened was, when he became president, you know, the severity of the problem, but also the grassroots mobilizing. You had, you know, the unions coming out, you had the CIO, you had all these wildcat strikes. And FDR realized that, like, you know, unless he actually, like, you know, did things for people, the country was going to fall apart. It's going to be revolution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only way, and that's always the case. I mean, I think a Democratic president will be better because it'll be more responsive to popular protest. But yeah, you have that popular protest. The same with the 60s, you know, like, you know, it was good to have Kennedy and, Johnson in there, but you really needed the civil rights people out on the streets to, like, you know, mm-hmm. Push them to do something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the politicians aren't going to make it happen. The people are the ones that make it happen. And enough people try to make something happen, then the politicians will follow. Yeah, that's the history has shown that over the years. Gene, I got to take a break. Yeah. Can you stay with us? I want to talk about your war criminal story. That's a doozy,
sure.
Okay? Gene here, one of the great reporters of The Nation magazine. We'll continue this segment right after this. Also on the broadcast, we have the latest from the North Coast Labor Federation, along with Pat Gallagher. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the issues most important to Ohio's labor trades than in the pages of the Labor Citizen. The full-color tabloid is delivered to thousands of union construction workers each month, providing reports from local unions, interesting feature stories, and news that impacts Ohio's union construction industry. But the only way this valuable monthly publication can be delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union membership is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting, or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for its communications and events needs, because the BMA Media Group knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to market union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit www.bmamedia.com.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon, and once again, welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. AWFradio.com is our website, and don't forget, you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, some examples. And Jeet here, once you get hooked on our show, I know you're going to listen to the show on our podcast. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. I know you're big on Twitter. You're definitely a tweeter out there, so we just got to get you hooked on our podcast, because I know you got a pretty good following on your Twitter account. I want to talk to you about.
I'd be happy to. Tweet out the podcast when it comes up.
Okay, appreciate that. Okay, talk to me about this the war that we have on. Trump says we're in a war with COVID-19. Now, you are of the opinion that he should be tried as a war criminal, because he's not playing the part very well. Go ahead and tell me about your most recent column here.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Trump is, you know, saying he's a wartime president, and he's using these metaphors, and he even said, like, doctors and nurses are like soldiers; they're like running into bullets, and that's a beautiful thing. Well, I excuse me, but, like, you know, like, I mean, if it's a war, it sounds like, you know, World War II, where Trump is Eisenhower. It's more like the Vietnam War, where Trump is like General Westmoreland, because a lot of these sacrifices are necessary, and or like the Iraq War. before, where, you know, America sent in troops without proper equipment, and also the people were predominantly suffering, as in Vietnam and Iraq. You know, it's not a shared sacrifice. It's like the poor, you know, like poor whites, poor African Americans, poor Latinos. Those are the ones who are bearing the brunt of this. So, I mean, like, it just seems like, you know, if you have a war, but, you know, you're giving money to Wall Street when you're not working to get proper equipment for your frontline people, if you're not doing everything you can to protect your soldiers, then what are you? I mean, I think you're a war criminal. I think that's exactly what I would say about Trump.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to ask you, what kind of reaction, when you posted this story, what kind of reaction did you get? You know, there's people on the far right, there's people on the far left that probably ate it all up. What kind of response did you get, Jeet?
Yeah. I think the article's pretty widely read. It's pretty widely shared. Some people get, you know, like, angry when you say things like that. But I think it's also the case that I think there's a lot of people who agree, who kind of share this view. I mean, I think there's and I think that it's I mean, Trump is a very polarizing figure. I mean, he has a lot of support. But I also think that he's, like, probably more widely loathed than, like, any president in modern memory. Going back to Herbert Hoover, like, I think you'd have to go back to Hoover to find someone like this. And I think that, I mean, to speak in a broader, maybe more bipartisan way, I think it's a very shameful thing because he sort of brought the office of the presidency into disgrace. Like, I think that the to have, you know, a president who lies like this, who is clearly wants to govern for parts of the country but not govern the whole country, I think that's a very shameful thing, and I think it's going to be a long time to recover from this. I mean, leaving, you know, aside the pandemic and the economy, like, just to recover from having a president like that, it's going to be a real challenge.
Yeah, you know, and the other part of the story, too, is the fact that he's got so many people, elected leaders, especially in the Senate, that they don't want. They it's almost like, and you hear stories that they don't like what he says or does, but they are going to support him. How do you react to that?
Well, I mean,
kind
Trump
of thing?
Has been very successful in sort of taming the Republican Party, and he's done it because anytime any of them speaks out against him, you know, he lashes out and they lose popularity. He's able to even do that with someone like, you know, John McCain, who had been the nominee and was like a war hero. But in the cases of, like, you know, people, Republicans in Congress have spoken out against Trump, and then Trump, you know, starts supporting a primary against them. And he's put the fear of God into the Republicans. And I have to say, it's a real act of cowardice, because I think that if you, like, you know, had these guys in private with a lie detector, they would be saying exactly the same things I'm saying. And exactly the same thing you're saying. Like, they know who he is, they know what he's doing, but they're just, like, they're more worried about their own, you know, political careers, their phony baloney jobs, than they are, like, with doing what's right. So I think it's really shameful. It's a real... it's a very dark moment in American history.
Jeet, I have to ask you, there's a lot of people when Trump was elected are saying, oh my God, I can't believe he was elected to be president of the United States of America because of his shady past, his real estate dealings in New York, and how outspoken he was prior to the campaign, back in 2016. And I think there's many that thought that, well, when he became president or becomes president, he would change. And apparently all he did was ramp it up a bit. Are you at all surprised by that at all? Did you expect that out of him?
Yeah, I didn't really think Trump could change because, I mean, the fact is that he's like a 74-year-old guy, you know, and I don't know how old he was when he was elected, but he was, like, well into his 70s. And he's been that way for his whole life. Like, I don't think it's so easy to change. And I think, more importantly, you know, he had no political background or career. Like, I think maybe you do kind of see, if someone is in politics, they might be able to mature at a higher office. But I don't think Trump ever had it in him. So it doesn't really surprise me. I think the Republicans surprise me a little bit more. I would have expected maybe just a little bit more opposition from them. I think Trump has done a really good job in sort of turning the Republican Party into the Trump Party. And I think, you know, I think the coming election is going to be a referendum, not just on Trump, but on the Republican Party. Like, I think that, I think we're seeing maybe a few hopeful polls. I mean, I think it's really tight on the national level, but I think on the Senate level, like, a lot of Republicans are hurting, and I think that's because of the association with Trump. I always thought, like, the big worry with Trump was always, for me, like, how is this guy going to handle an emergency? Like, he has no background, no training, no character to run an emergency. And I think America's actually been lucky until this year. Like the last few years, you know, Trump was able to coast on the, Obama economic boom and not really, you know, mess things up and not get into a war. But now we're seeing, like, exactly who he is in an emergency, and it's not pretty.
Yeah, yeah, the true colors are coming out, no doubt. All right, Gene, I'm going to leave it on that note. It's a long way till November. Anything can happen, and I'm sure we'll be talking again between this time and election time. So you keep up the great writing, and you got a big fan here in Northeastern Ohio. I'm sure you got many around the country, but you please stay in touch with us, okay?
Okay, great. Yeah, no, I mean, I was happy to talk, and would love to do this again, yeah.
Okay, let's do that. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast and give us a good rating, okay? Especially since you're on it, okay?
Okay, I'll do that. Yes, I will. Okay.
Take care, Jeet. Thank you for joining us. Jeet here, who is one of the great reporters for The Nation magazine. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation. Once again, you are listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
Lyuna. The Laborers International Union of North America is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. Remember, you can still find us online, awfradio.com, and you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And we ask you to please subscribe to our podcast and give us a good rating. 5 stars would be nice. Let's go to line number 2. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Gallagher, on behalf of the steelworkers and the North Coast Labor Federation, both of them sponsors of this show. Mr. Gallagher, welcome back to the show. Are you ready for Memorial Day weekend?
No, I've been ready for Memorial Day weekend for a long time. I'm finally glad. Hopefully we're going to get some. We missed spring, so I guess we're going to go right into summer. So
this had to be the worst May weather-wise. I mean, when I saw it snowing, what, less than 2 weeks ago, yep. I said, there's something wrong. There's something really wrong here. Jeez.
May 10th, I had about an inch and a half of snow in Garfield Heights, Ohio. So,
just crazy. All right, we got lots of ground to cover here. Let's start off with some endorsements. And this is on behalf of the North Shore Federation of Labor. And let's start off with the Supreme Court of Ohio. Let's go there.
Yeah, well, it's the Ohio AFL-CIO has announced their endorsement in the race for the Ohio Supreme Court for Jennifer Bruner, former Secretary of State. And our own Jack O'Donnell, who's a Cleveland Municipal Court judge, very good, strong labor backgrounds, both of them, been good judges on the bench, and we're hoping we can get them elected to the Supreme Court come this next November.
Very good. O'Donnell's on the Common Pleas Court, I believe, not the Municipal Court.
Oh, right.
I know the Municipal
Police,
Court because
right.
I work there, so I know he's not on the...
I'm glad you're here to correct me, Flash.
I'm trying to do my best here, buddy.
Keep me out of trouble.
I know. It's not easy. You know that.
No, I know that. So,
Joe Biden, I see the steelworkers have gone ahead and endorsed him. He's not even the nominee yet, but we know he's going to become one. Go ahead. What's the latest on that?
It was a big day for the steelworkers yesterday. We announced our endorsement for Joe Biden, and this is an accumulation of what we call Your Union, Your Voice program that we started last fall, where we sent out questionnaires to all the presidential candidates, including Donald Trump. And we tried to get some feedback on them on where their positions were on very different issues from health care, trade, pension security, Social Security, workplace safety, collective bargaining, organizing, all different kind of subjects that are important to our members. And we also held town hall meetings across the union. We had 170 in the steelworkers across the country where we wanted input from our members and find out what they wanted to do. We also did an online survey where we had responses from our members also. And 86% of them said the three big issues were health care, were job security, and workers' rights. Those were the three big issues that came up. And we notified all the candidates about this, and we got questionnaires back from them, and Donald Trump refused to answer our questionnaire, refused to participate in our survey, so which was very disappointing to me because I was very looking forward to see what his responses were going to be about right to work, about organizing, about collective bargaining rights. That would have been very interesting to see what his positions were on that, but he refused to participate.
Well, that's too bad. So you did reach out to him and just didn't get the response.
Right.
You mentioned health care. Any specifics on that? I mean, we're hearing Medicare for all, maybe expanding Obama, getting back to Obamacare with a public option. Do we get any details on that?
Yeah, what Vice President Biden's plan is that he wants to lower the Medicare eligibility to age 60. He also wants to create a public option so Americans can join a Medicare-like program or keep, their private insurance. And it'll be a good, better way to negotiate prices under a large conglomerate of people rather than just each individual going out there and trying to, get a plan like in exchanges right now. It's an improvement on Obamacare, and it's a further, involvement of Obamacare. And we think that'll be, it'll help to drive the cost down of health care in our country.
Mm-hmm. I see also domestic economic issues were part of this survey, and Biden has proposed a $1 trillion federal investment in infrastructure, which would create millions of middle-class jobs. I know Trump talked about this when he took office. Nothing's been done. He's blaming the fact that the Democrats have come down to bring him down, impeachment and all that stuff. You heard all the stories there. But, you saw what happened in Michigan with that dam breaking. I mean, that was amazing. They warned them like 10 years ago that needed that need some help. And once again, Pat, how many times have you seen this in America where Terry O'Sullivan says it best, what, 25% of the bridges are structurally deficient? I mean, we hear it all the time, and nothing is ever done about it until you have a calamity like what happened in Michigan.
Right.
So hopefully you get the right people in Congress and in the White House. Maybe we can move the needle in the right direction, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, Flash, as you know, I'm a big supporter and promoter of infrastructure rebuilding. I've talked about that many times on the show and have expressed my views on that. And that's one thing I disagree with Vice President Biden. I don't think $1 trillion is enough. I think we need to invest more. I think the American Society of Civil Engineers have given our infrastructure in the United States like a D or a D+, which is unacceptable here. And this has been going on for years and years, and the deficit is even more than $1 trillion. But, I mean, it's a step in the right direction. It's a good, solid plan that he has to rebuild our roadways, rebuild our infrastructure for our energy systems. You know, also for like the dam calamity that we have in Michigan and other issues that we've had. I mean, think about what happened in New Orleans when Katrina hit because it was not properly, you know, levied and dammed there, down there. So, I mean, there's so much work to do. And that's one thing I wish Congress would even address right now is that rather than, you know, all these trillions of dollars that we're putting in these bills, the stimulus bills, I think one big proponent of these stimulus bills should be an infrastructure rebuilding right now and put millions of Americans to work, or maybe not millions, but hundreds of thousands of Americans to work in rebuilding our infrastructure in our country, which is solely needed, and giving them their workers the skills to continue after this infrastructure task is accomplished, which is going to take years and years and years to catch us up. There's many other countries infrastructure is in a much better shape than ours is the United States. And it's time that we get back and get in. That's an important part for our citizens, an important part for our economy, is to have a solid and safe infrastructure.
Go back to the FDR days, Works Progress administration, when they rebuilt the structure that we have now. I mean, that's exactly what happened. A couple minutes left here. Just want to pick your brain. First of all, you said there was a blood drive going on. What's going on there?
You know, due to the COVID-19, you know, pandemic, there's been a big shortage of blood, and we also know, been seen on TV how, you know, there's been a lot of people who have not been able to make ends meet and need food. So the United Steelworkers and of District 1 and Sub-District 1, which is Northern Ohio area, is sponsoring a Blue Note food drive on June 2nd at 6 a.m. from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Dave McCall Hall, 3421 Independence Road. And what we're doing is we're trying to get some blood donations. We're trying to get some food, and the food's going to go to the Cleveland Food Bank and try to give back to the community. We have many of our own members that are laid off, and we've been trying to get, you know, some relief plans for them. We also have many members that are working and appreciate the fact they're working and they want to give back to the community.
Very good. Okay, how are we doing with getting back to work and, most importantly, having the proper safety gear getting back to work? What do we know right now, Pat?
Well, I mean, we're in, you know, different states and different industries. You know, there's been a downturn in a lot of the manufacturing because there's a decreased demand for automobiles, for durable goods like washing machines and refrigerators, and people are a little bit concerned. They're holding on to their money. They're not making spending, and that's very understandable. So there's a lot of pullback on manufacturing right now, and especially, too, and if you know that the auto plants, they just went back to work this week. So they're starting on production. We're hoping that kicks things up. So we're in various different states of you know, manufacturing the steel workers, and we're hoping that we can get everybody back to work pretty soon. We look for increased recovery, maybe starting in the third quarter of this year, and hopefully we can get back to work as long as it's done safely and our members are protected. We're all forward. We're all in favor of moving forward on reopening, you know, the workplaces.
Make sure that everybody's safe and they keep their distance. I don't know if you caught this story the other day. I guess you mentioned the Ford workers at the Avon Lake Assembly Plant. They were given watches that beep if you're within 6 feet of each other. I mean, that's the kind of world. That's the new normal, I guess, today. So.
Well, there's going to be a lot of adaptation that we're going to have to do, and this is going to be a constantly evolved situation, and we're going to have to keep how we keep people safe. And that's one thing that, you know, Vice President Biden's big strong on is workplace safety and health. He's made some big commitments there. He's going to refund OSHA and MSHA and strongly oppose budget cuts that would cut those you know, agencies. And we think that's very important that we have some government regulation out there that protects workers in the workplace.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking about OSHA at the top of the show. It's pretty bad when you have to sue OSHA to get them to do their job, but that's exactly what the AFL-CIO did this week. Amazing. Just an amazing story. Well, Pat, you take care, my friend. Be safe. Have a wonderful Memorial weekend here. Hearing good things about the Browns. Hopefully we'll be able to be in the stands. I don't know.
We'll see. There's going to be the new Browns fan, too, is going to have a mask and gloves and even in the summertime, so.
There you go, my friend. Okay, take care, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
All right, thanks, Flash, and happy Memorial Day to all the listeners.
You got it. Pat Gallagher on behalf of the Steelworkers and the North Coast Labor Federation. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Steelworkers and working class perspectives on being safe at work. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.